Welcome to the Inner Leader Podcast. I'm your host, Lindsay Tran, and I'm here to serve your highest purpose on this planet, discovering who you are and what you are meant to do. Each week, I will bring to you conversations that will elevate your mind, deepen your awareness, and expand your heart to help you unlock your inner leader. We will explore what it means to live a life of deeper meaning, one that is in alignment with our soul, discovering how to show up as courageous and compassionate leaders and joyfully awaken to the best gifts in life. Happiness, love, and inner peace. I trust that there is a reason why you are here. You are here because you are hungry for impact. You believe that your life has a greater purpose. You believe that you have unlimited potential to be fulfilled. Who you are at the core is an inner leader. If so, you have come to the right place. I'm proud of you for tuning in, choosing to invest in yourself, believing in your potential, and making a commitment towards living a life of greater purpose. Before we dive in, make sure you subscribe to our podcast to tune in on the daily. Without further ado, let's get started. Our inner leader today is Kristen Constable. Kristen is a founder, CEO, and whole life leadership coach at The Winning Academy. She is an official member of Forbes Coaches Council. Kristen has over a decade of leadership coaching experience with over hundreds of executives, leaders, and entrepreneurs in North America. People would describe Kristen's coaching style as yogi meets badass boss. That's literally how I would describe her too. She is a spiritual female boss. You will definitely want to tune into this episode as Kristen shares her deepest life wisdom as a leadership coach from over a decade of experience. And I promise you will find so many truth bombs to take away and apply to your own life to help you become an inner leader. In this episode, Kristen vulnerably opened up about her fears and insecurities as a kid, how she tried to fit in but felt more lonely on her path of seeking belonging, how trying to fit in made it difficult for her to figure out her true self, all until her life struggles led her to go on a soul quest to understand who she truly is and discovering her truth. Now, Kristen is an empowering female leader who coaches others on how to be the leader of their own life at The Winning Academy. I start off this episode by asking her, what is the one thing she is grateful for today?
Oh, I love that question. One thing that I'm grateful for today is I just went on this retreat with amazing coach Ursula Lipstein, and she introduced me to this meditation called Set Kriya, and it's a Kundalini meditation. And right now I'm on a 40-day challenge, and I'm on day 12 today, and it's a meditation where you've got to put your hand, like arms above your head in kind of a mudra, and you go for 11 minutes chanting Satnam. And today was the first day where I didn't open my eyes during the 11 minutes to look at how much more time I've got because it was so painful. So today I'm grateful for my progress in that practice.
Wow, that is wonderful. I've never heard of that practice before.
It's pretty powerful. It's all around activating your Kundalini energy and just showing up to the universe with kind of this statement around like, I am, this is me. And so it's pretty cool.
What is the Kundalini?
Yeah, so I'm not a huge expert on the Kundalini yoga tradition. That's not like I am a yoga teacher, but I didn't practice in the Kundalini tradition. But what the Kundalini yoga tradition, from what I understand about it, is it's really, in my experience of it, I guess I can speak more to than anything, is it's more around like the energetic activation. So how I describe it to other people is like a lot of the yoga that, you know, I do is around like body and anatomy and stuff like that. But Kundalini, when I do Kundalini yoga, I feel it on like an energetic level. So it's really about like activating this like Kundalini energy up through your energetic chakra system to, just to bring activation. So that's kind of how I look at it, as being different from the type of yoga that I do, which is more of a vinyasa practice.
So does it give you more energy?
Yeah, it's just more about like unlocking and activating the different levels of your like chakra system. So with the Satnam practice that I was talking about, the Sat Kriya practice, it's really around that third chakra level and really activating that part of your energy system. So there's different practices that you do. It's like some of them are a little bit like strange. Like if you look at the first time I went to a Kundalini class, I was like, what is going on here? Because you do like lots of like just flapping your arms for a bunch of minutes side to side, but they're all of the exercises are like specifically designed to really activate this internal energy.
So to help the audience kind of get to know you more, could you take us back to your childhood? Where did you grow up? Were you born in Vancouver?
So I was actually born in Saskatoon in Saskatchewan, and that's because both my parents are immigrants. So they moved to Canada from England when they were 21, and they left everything in England, all of their family. My mom had one sister here, my aunt, and she was based in Saskatoon. So they moved to Saskatoon to be with her and live in Canada. And I was born there on December 21st, a minus 40 degree day. My dad always tells that story every single birthday I have. And we lived there for about 5 years, and then we moved to Vancouver. So as much as I can remember, I, you know, have grown up and lived in and around the Vancouver area. And, you know, one of the things that I really value about my childhood and my family experience is because I think both my parents are immigrants, and they moved here and they started, you know, from scratch, is I've always had the messaging from them and the lived experience too, that like, if you want something, you can do it. And it's really around, like, I, you know, have multiple times I can pull up in my mind right now around my dad sharing with me is like, well, if you want something, you just have to know what you want, and you have to work hard for it. And that was kind of our, you know, my model for growing up is, you know, just find out what you want and put the energy required to make it happen. So yeah. And I've got a younger sister who is amazing, and her and I, you know, have such a great deep relationship now. And so it was just the four of us really growing up.
And when you talk about your parents teaching you these, essentially giving you guidance of following what you wanted to do and putting your heart and soul into pursuing that. So when you were a child, what were some of the things that you've wanted to do, or what were some of the dreams that you had when you were younger?
Well, so I can say a few different things. So where I first started to really tap into the power of goal setting and, you know, the power of visualization and human performance really was through swimming. So my dad, another thing that he kind of modeled was, I think it was like 40 years old, he decided that he wanted to do the Ironman triathlon. And the crazy thing about that was that he didn't know how to swim.
Wow.
So, yeah. So he had been doing duathlons, which are like bike run races. And he's like, I think I'm going to try a triathlon, not just any triathlon, but like Ironman, which is like the longest triathlon pretty much out there other than ultra Ironman. And anyways, taught himself how to swim and did it. And he's done multiple in his life. But through that kind of athletic experience, I got introduced to swimming, competitive swimming, and I became a competitive swimmer. And that was a lot of what my childhood and adolescence was focused around, was, you know, all of my time that wasn't at school, I was competitively swimming. So we'd have up to 7 practices a week. So some days it would be morning and afternoon practice. And so that was a really, you know, interesting time because I got to around what it actually takes to make stuff happen, intimately connected with what failure looks like. I can remember, you know, intimately this one race that I really wanted to get to. I wanted to get a provincial standing in it because I wanted to go to the provincials. And I tried so hard and I put all my heart and soul into it, and I missed it by like, I don't know, 0.2 seconds. And so that was really a formative time in my life for building up what I look at as like resiliency now and work ethic, but also being okay with failure and being okay with, you know, trying something as hard as you can and not succeeding. So that's kind of one avenue, I guess, that I was pursuing as a child.
Now that you're doing a lot of coaching and working with people, did you foresee that coming when you were younger? You had the dreams or the desire of doing what you are doing now?
I don't think, like, if I look back on it, I'm like, oh my God, there were so many pointers along the way saying that. But when I was really young, the first job that I ever wanted to have was a dream psychologist. I remember telling my dad that. I'm like, I want to be a dream psychologist. And he's like, I don't know if that actually exists. So I remember that being there. And then I looked into sports psychology and wanted to get involved in sports psychology. And then I did my undergrad in psychology. And I got introduced to the world of business really in university. And that's where I started to combine the worlds of business and psychology, as I got to see how those two worlds could overlap. And the path seemed a lot clearer to me to go that route than any of the other routes. But why I kind of laugh and say now that I look back, there's so many signs is if you go over to my mom and dad's house right now, they live in the same house that we grew up in. And they've got a basement that you go down to that's unfinished. And on the basement stairs, what you'll find is all of these little kids, well, people's names. And when I was younger, my mom used to babysit after school. And after school, I would, all of the kids that were in the, that she would babysit, I would bring them onto the steps and I wrote their names. So everyone had a spot and we would play school and I would always be the teacher. And I actually got in trouble for it because one of the other kids wanted to be the teacher and I wouldn't let them. And the parents were like, no, you have to give everyone a chance to be the teacher. So now that I look back on that, I'm like, okay, there is like, you know, even from a really young age, this idea of like supporting people and helping people and teaching was something that I really obviously was called to.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I think I had a very similar story as well where my grandparents also had like a babysitting, kind of like a home kindergarten per se. And I was always wanting to be the teacher and I wouldn't let other kids do that.
Yeah, there's a good lesson in there of like, you know, leading and being the follower and needing to be both.
Yeah. And then funny enough, like if I got kicked out of the classroom because I would try to be the teacher, I would line up my teddy bears and I would like do it in my room.
That's amazing. It's like, fine, you guys won't work with me. I'll find other kids to work with.
Yeah. That's funny. If you could take us back to some of like, you know, maybe during your teenage years or young adulthood, what were some of the fears that you had growing up or what were some of the insecurities that you had to overcome?
I had an amazing family unit and it's so much guidance. And, you know, when I look at all of the support that I had, it was all there. And that still didn't really, that wasn't enough to keep me totally on track. And, you know, it wasn't always like rainbows and butterflies for me. It was, I had challenges along the way and it took me a really long time to get clear on who I was and what was really important to me and what how I talk about it now is how to really be the leader of my life and own being the leader of my life. So I think, you know, in adolescence, in my adolescent years, some of the challenges that I really came up against were, you know, Brené Brown talks about this perfectly, is the difference between belonging and fitting in. And it wasn't until I read her book, what one is it? I think it's called Rising Strong. It's in Rising Strong that she talks about this. And she makes the distinction around fitting in versus belonging. And I spent a good chunk of my adolescence and early adulthood trying to fit in. And actually, I was really good at it. And that's what made it, you know, challenging to figure out what the problem was because I had lots of friends and I could fit in with anybody, any group. And I, you know, always made friends easily. So on the outside, it didn't really seem like anything was all that wrong. But what the missing was that I never felt like I really belonged. but I never felt like I could truly be myself or that I was actually with my people. And that was part of the searching of like why I had so many different friend groups and so many interests, was because I never felt like I was really like at home. So it was, you know, it's taken a long time for me to get to the place of really understanding who I am. And a lot of that work came through personal development work and becoming a coach and doing this type of work, as I'm a huge believer in having to do, I can only take my clients as far as I've gone myself. So I've invested thousands of dollars, tons of hours, done crazy experiences to really, you know, start to understand who I am and really feel like I belong. And that's been a journey for sure.
Wow, that's amazing. I think my friend just gave me a book, Brené Brown, the other one. It's called Braving the Wilderness.
Yes, I think that actually might be the one that I'm referencing. It is.
Oh, okay, because yeah. I started reading the first chapter and it talks about belonging. And so yeah. I was like, wow, that's, yeah, and it's so interesting that you're mentioning that today.
It always works like that. Yeah, no, I love that book. It was a really, yeah, there's some really good gems in there. But for me, that was the biggest, like, awakening part of like, oh, that's what was going on for me during that time.
At which point did you started to realize that you, all you were doing were just trying to fit in? And how did you make that transition from just fitting into finding a place of belonging?
Yeah. So, I mean, for me, it was a pretty extreme thing that had to happen. So I got married when I was quite young. So I got married when I was 21 years old. And I ended up getting divorced by the time I was 23. And I spent a few years just really soul searching, and but not in a good way. Like, it was, I wouldn't call it soul searching even so much as floundering. And it's kind of like floundering, trying to figure out where, like, find my feet on the ground again after that, because I had no idea who I was in the world and where I actually fit in and where I belonged. And you know, I was spending a lot of time numbing through different things, alcohol, being around people all the time, work, immersing myself in work. And it was one day, it was a really clear moment in my brain. It was actually New Year's morning. And I woke up, it was January 1st. And I remember thinking about what I wanted my word for the year to be, because I always have words, anchors for each year. And I've been doing this for years. And the anchor that I really wanted, the word that came to me so easily was connection. And it was because I was sitting there on New Year's morning by myself. I had just been out the night before with a ton of different, like, so many friends. It was a really fun night. But I woke up feeling so lonely. And I felt like I didn't know who I was. I didn't, wasn't connected to myself, and I didn't really feel connected to, you know, my community, my world. And so that was kind of my like wake up of like, okay, something needs to change here. And I spent that whole entire year cultivating connection to myself first. So what that looked like was like a lot of, alone time, a lot of meditation, a lot of just doing things that I needed to do to kind of get back to getting in touch with who I was. Stopping the numbing was really what that year was all about.
And then what did you find after you made that kind of, I guess, like a change in direction, or after you decided that this is the route that you were going to take to like get in touch with yourself and being more connected with yourself? So What did you find on that journey?
Well, that's where I really got connected to the power of values. And really, you know, we talk about values, and a lot of my coaching work is around connecting people to values, their values. And what I find is that in general, and I know this was the case for me, I kind of had a sense for what they were, but I didn't really understand them. I wasn't like intimately connected with them on a like embodied, visceral level. So what I found through that year was I found out what my values were, what was important to me. And I also found out that I had the ability to choose and re-choose. So part of the journey was around letting go and forgiving myself for a lot of like mistakes and a lot of like you know, paths that I took that I didn't want to take. And what I discovered was that even though that had happened, in any moment we have the ability to choose a new path or a new way. And that was what the biggest thing that I discovered is, like, yesterday doesn't have to predict today. And in fact, it can be completely different. It's like today can, you know, predict tomorrow by your actions and what you choose, but it doesn't have to be a reflection of your past. So some of the values that I really connected to during that year that are still huge values of mine are around continuous growth and evolution. And it's something that I hang on to, and I constantly look at, however many years later this is now, of like, how am I continuing to grow and evolve as a person? Because I know I don't want to be who I was 5 years ago. I want to have different life experiences and new awareness that shape who I am today and going to be in the future.
And what are some of the things that you do now to continuously evolve and grow as a person?
Yeah, so I was just actually telling you before we pressed record that I do this annual solo retreat every year. So once a year, I go to my favorite place in the world, which is Tofino in British Columbia, and I spend about a week there on my own. And the intention for it is to do like a deep dive, to just look at the different aspects of my life, of me, what's happening, and look at what's working and what isn't. And I always use the frame, if I were to like recreate from scratch today, what would things look like? And from that place, I can see, what am I doing just because it's what I've always done versus what am I doing that's truly in alignment with who I am today? So that's kind of like I'm a huge fan of like rituals and rhythms. So things that we do on a kind of a regular basis that we can look forward to and make sure that they're there. So that's one annual ritual that I have, and rituals that I have kind of more on a weekly basis are like more tactical things like making sure that there's time in my calendar for self-development. And that could just be like reading and making sure that I'm always reading a book or listening to podcasts or making time for connections with people that are inspiring, and just making sure that I don't get stuck in the weeds, which is like the doing and the day-to-day, because being a solo business owner is like, it can be very easy to get stuck in your inbox and just do the things that are right in the front of your face. But I always think about stuff like this as like, it's the really important stuff that's not urgent that gets like the short end of the stick if we don't create time for it. So I always make sure that there's time in my schedule for that type of stuff. And then I always have a coach as well. I'm a coach, and I wholeheartedly believe in the value of coaching, and I make sure that I always am working with someone all of the time.
And for your annual retreat, through the week that you do it or the 10 days that you do it, do you have a specific structure that you follow? Like, oh, this is day one, and this is what we're doing day one, this is what we're reflecting on, and this is day two, day three, day four? Or do you kind of go with the flow? How do you go about that annual retreat that you have?
Yeah, it's totally organic and go with the flow. Because I don't know what'll come up. So I kind of go, it's one of the only times where I kind of clear my schedule for the most part. Sometimes I'll have some coaching calls that I'll do while I'm there. But otherwise I clear my schedule, and I always have a morning adventure and an evening adventure. And I usually go outdoors and, you know, either do a beach walk or get in the water or whatever. And then in between that is just like a ton of journaling, and I just kind of see what comes up.
Thank you so much for sharing that.
Yeah, of course.
So looking back to the years that have passed by, all of the challenges that you've overcome, all of the awakening moments that you've had within yourself, what advice would you give to your younger self?
Great question. I mean, I think it's still advice that I give myself today, or try and remind myself of today. I think it's that just the saying is like, it's all unfolding as it should. Because there's even the, you know, in the moment when I look back on my, like, what I would call like my lowest moments, where I felt most like desperate or most lost, in hindsight, they were all serving a purpose. And I wouldn't be who I am today with the insights that I have and with the perspective that I have without those. And so I think the advice, and the reason I say I still give this to myself now is because still when things get tough, it's hard not to get grippy and try to be like, it shouldn't be like this, or it should change, and really just be with, okay, that's all unfolding as it should. What is this moment here to teach me? And just being with it, and it will pass, and something, it'll, like, you know, the seasons will change. And it'll get better. And that's just kind of the evolution of life, is that there, it's not all uphill. It doesn't all go better and better and better exponentially. It goes all better, but it's like up and down along the way. That's been my experience. So, yeah, I think it would just be that, is like, it's unfolding as it should, and have faith and trust that you're getting exactly what you need.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that our lives have a purpose? And if it does, what is your purpose or your calling? I know you touched a little bit about that when we were talking about your childhood.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, this is a deep, Lindsay. I could talk about this forever. I could talk about this. Actually, I think this is where we met, was at a talk around purpose, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, what's interesting is, yeah, so there's a little bit that's similar to what I was, when I was doing that talk, and, a little bit's evolved for me around how I view purpose. So I think when most people talk about purpose, when we're kind of like, you know, in general media, talk about what is your purpose, we attach it to something that we're doing. So my purpose is to, to be able to help children, you know, see their full potential, or to, for my case, is, you know, the purpose statement that I work with is to unlock light and activate a ripple effect. And I think it's really important when it comes to purpose that it's not, that our purpose isn't connected to what we're doing in like an action sense, but it can be applied to almost everything or any kind of situation. So when I share my purpose statement to unlock light and activate a ripple effect, that could be as a teacher, that could be as a coach, that could be as a mom, that could be as a wife. You know, there's all of these different applications for that purpose, but what I'm doing isn't as important as the essence or the energy that's behind that. My take on your question is that we all have a purpose, but it's more around this like energy that we bring, this gift that we bring, and it's not so much associated with a specific action, but more just the impact that just by us being in this world, being who we are, we can't help but do it. And I think that that's really empowering and important for people to get, is like, your purpose isn't actually about doing more, finding it, or going out and trying to seek something outside of yourself. It's actually just who you are and who you can't help but being. And when we're doing purpose work, it's really around actually just articulating and crystallizing what that means in either a statement or some words that you can use to actually like anchor. Does that make sense?
Yeah, you know, that totally makes sense, because I think like the beginning of my journey with this whole purpose talking is like 3 years ago. At the time, I understood purpose as something that I needed to do for my life to serve a purpose. Uh-huh. And then I guess like as I go on this journey, I realize that purpose is, it has nothing to do. I mean, it does have something to do with what you do, but that's not what it is. I realized too that purpose is just in your being and in your existence and in your presence. And I learned this as well when someone at the meditation center in Vipassana, they told me that, you know, people think of changing the world as if you had to do like some big crazy things. Yeah. But in fact, you can simply change the world or life or communities or people around you by just being you. Mm-hmm. And that's like the most powerful thing that you can do, because just simply with your presence, you can change another person with your positive energy or your higher vibration. You can uplift and empower another person. And they kind of brought it back to, you know, talking about working on yourself first before you're like trying to create some kind of change externally. So like you said, it begins internally and then outwards.
Exactly. So yeah, the application is important, but it's not where we start. And I think a lot of people start with like, well, how am I going to apply it? So, you know, my purpose is to teach, or my purpose is to, do something, like do something. And yeah, I think that that's a really great way of putting it, as you just put it, because that way it's like actually just about getting out of your own way. Because the problem is like when we're not living on purpose, it's because we're not being true to who we are. And we're letting, you know, some of those things, those self-limiting beliefs, some of the kind of filters that we've put on ourselves or cloaks that we've put on ourselves, they're getting in the way of us just actually showing up as who we truly are.
And when you talked about, you know, like your whole journey of fitting in and then finding your belongings and how that evolved because you have found yourself and you found who you were and your values. So for somebody who's, let's say, who feel really lost in this moment, who maybe doesn't really know who they are and are not so connected to their values, what pointer would you give them? Like, where could they begin?
Yeah. So I think with the values piece is just even beginning with something like basic is of like a, you know, there's tons of, I've got one, like a values exploration exercise where you just get like a list of values and you just start going through and you just start circling or looking at the definitions and seeing what words start to create an emotional response in you. And the emotional response, you can look for both a positive one. So like certain words or sentiments are going to have a really positive emotional response for you. Like you're going to be like, yeah, I definitely want more of that in my life. So whenever I look at something like freedom and having the ability to direct my time and energy to the things I want to do, for me personally, I get so much like such an emotional response from them. Like, yes, I want that. So I know that that's like a value for me. Where other words, I can read them and I can be like, oh, that's, yeah, that's okay. That sounds kind of nice. Or I can have a response to it is like, no, I definitely don't want that. And then you kind of know from there, it's like, okay, those probably aren't values of mine right now. And one piece of advice I would give people as soon as they start doing this values work is understanding that values they evolve as you evolve. So what may have been your values 3 years ago may not be your values anymore. Some of them, they might be, some of them might be, but they likely are to evolve as well. So, you know, I work with clients on this a lot, and I had someone come to me and they're like, you know what, I feel really bad because I don't have family in my values. And it's always been really important to me, but just at this stage in my life, I'm starting a business and I'm really working on myself. And when I look to my top values, they're still important to me, but they're just not like top three. And my coaching around that is that doesn't need to mean anything. It's not around morality and it's not around being a bad person. It's just at this point in your life, what are the things that matter to you most? And they're allowed to evolve as you evolve. So that would be my tips, is just starting to bring some awareness to what are the things that like bring you energy that you couldn't live without? What are the patterns there? And then just be okay knowing that they're likely to evolve as you evolve.
That kind of touch base with your teaching of personal leadership. Could you maybe share with us what is personal leadership and how can we be a leader in our own life?
Yeah, for sure. Thanks. This is a topic that I'm like so passionate about because I actually believe that if everyone saw themselves as a leader in their own lives, there would be so much change in the world for the positive. The amount of things that would be able to be impacted would be huge in terms of causes and, you know, and yeah, just issues in the world, but then also people's quality of life would just be exponentially increased. So when I think about what it means to for self-leadership, or what I call whole life leadership, is really it's around taking 100% responsibility for your life and everything in it. And for just taking on the mindset of looking at, like, if I was the leader of my life, like just as if you were the leader of your business or the leader of a team, how would I deal with this situation right now? What would I do? And it's really intriguing to see what the answers are that come from that question, because when we start to look at our lives from that place, we no longer settle for things that are like mediocre, whether that be relationships that aren't solid, communication that may not be that good, or say it's our health or fitness or, you know, our job, or in a job that we don't love. When we start to take on the mindset of being this leader of our life, we start to look at it of being like, well, who's going to fix that if I'm not happy with it? The only person who can fix that is me. And that is such an empowering, it's a scary place to be, to some degree, because it puts all of the, you know, ownership and accountability on you. But it's also such an empowering place to be, because no matter what, you kind of take on the responsibility and the accountability for impacting your life and the quality of your life and everything in it. And then from there, that's where the ripple effects can happen. Because once you take on being the leader of your own life, well, then you're unstoppable, and you can start leading others and inspiring others and taking on big causes in the world. But without leading self, it's almost impossible to do those other things.
Mm-hmm. And so when it comes to leading yourself and leading your own life, ultimately, we have the power to decide which direction we would like to take with our lives. And with that decision-making power comes a lot of, I think, pressure, because a lot of times society, family, peers pressure to do certain things, but then there are other things that we may want to do, or our heart or soul call to do. So what do you do when facing the decisions of consciously creating your life? Would you generally advise for people to kind of follow their heart, follow their intuition? Like, how do they go about consciously creating this life for themselves?
Yeah, great question. I think the big thing to understand is it's not about having this perfect life and everything being perfect in it, but it's around being in choice around the choices that you make. So I'll give you maybe an example from my own life that I'm dealing with right now, and it might help. And it's around my home and where we're going to live as a family. And so currently we live in Vancouver, and my heart and soul is calling to live somewhere else, somewhere near the water, a little bit quieter, a smaller place in the forest. And that's what my heart and soul is really calling for. And if I was just to take on being the conscious creator of my life and doing everything that my heart and soul called for, I might, you know, choose to move there. But the reality is I have a husband, I have a stepson who goes to school in Vancouver, and that may not be an option right now. And I have to be in choice around, well, what could that look like? What are the other choices that I have? How could I still get what I want, which is this kind of place of like solitude and connection to nature, but also work with, you know, what I have in my life? And maybe that's something that I have down the road, but right now it's like, you know, maybe not the best option given everything else. So I think the important part around that is to look at, really listen to what your heart and soul is calling for you to do, and then really understand why and what's underneath it, and look at all of your options from that place of why. And I mean, you do have to do what's right for you, and that means that there's other dynamics at play often. So it might be family, it might be other responsibilities in your life, and kind of looking at it from a holistic perspective, and then being in choice around the choice that you make moving forward.
The last question that I usually ask all of our guests on this show is, if you knew that you were going to die in 6 months, you know, generally people say, yeah, I want to spend all of my time with family, friends, all of my loved ones. Mm-hmm. And completely, you know, like that's what all of us want at the end of our lives. And so after spending all of your time with your loved ones, you have 6 months left, and what would you do with the time that you have left? What would you do for yourself?
Oh, wow. Going deep here, Linz, hey? And I like how you took away the cop-out answer, family and friends.
I know, because it's such an easy one, right? Like, we all want to spend time with family and friends.
Totally, yeah. Oh, what would I do? You know, I think I would go to some of the places that I've been to that just feel like heaven on earth, and I would just spend time journaling, being in nature, taking in all of the like magic of this like physical world that we're in, because it's so magical, and being in nature would be like a really important thing for me to do with family and friends. just to kind of like, because who knows what happens after this, so just kind of take in what is magical about this experience that we are gifted with every single day.
Thank you so much, Kristen, for being on the show. We're so grateful to have you here.
Thank you. That was super fun. And best of luck with your journey around following all of this for yourself, because I know you're on this path as well.
Thank you so much for tuning in to the Inner Leader podcast. If you liked this episode as much as I did, please spread the love and share it with your friends and family on social media to support our guests and the show. They will appreciate your incredible love on this beautiful day. Thank you for being an amazing listener on our show. Please give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help us grow our community. Subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify if you haven't already. You can also send us a DM on Instagram at The Inner Leader to introduce yourself, ask questions, and make future requests for the show. We welcome you with big hugs always. And before you go, make sure you share this episode with your friends and family. Spread as much love as you can, because the more you give, the more you receive. And remember, today is the day. I love you. Mwah. Until next time.